to the Midday Grind with Martin and Marlo on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
The Lake Charles, Louisiana, little Bessie girl I once knew. And she told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me.
Welcome back, Midday Grind, 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com, live from patios. Charlie Marlowe, Rennie Knott, Chris Gardner, Matt Dahlberg hooking us up here on site. Brendan Schaefer back at the studio. Martin Kilcoyne off today. He will be back tomorrow. Right now on the phone line, we have Dr. Rick Lehman joining us for his weekly Monday visit for Ask Dr. Rick. Dr. Rick, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Really well, sitting here at patios, getting ready for the big Cardinals-Cubs series. And Rennie Knott, he had said, he misses talking to you. How you
yes,
doing?
Yes, Doc. I've got so many questions. I've got this one right now about my 53-year-old knee. And, you know, I'm back walking again, then I'm healthy. And the other day I'm walking, and my knee is fine, but I get home and I notice the side of my knee, there's not swelling, but it's like something sticking out about half an inch. And it's in between, where do I want to say? It's right on the side there, you know, in between the joint type of situation. And it sticks right out like almost a finger sticking out. What could that possibly be?
Well, most likely that's something called a meniscus cyst. And basically what's happened is you've probably torn a little piece of the meniscus on the outside. And these are actually not that uncommon. So, you know, we see it, I would say, fairly frequently. And then a little fluid pouch kind of tracks through the tear, and you end up with this lump on the side of your knee and maybe a little bit of pain on the outside of your knee if you twist or you rotate. So if that doesn't kind of go down in a little bit, Rennie, you probably need to call and see somebody or see us or see what's going on, maybe get an MRI of your knee.
Okay. But it's not career ending. I mean, if I want to make a comeback someday in the old man's league, I got a shot?
You're golden.
All right, thanks.
I like it. Dr. Rick, I'm wondering, you hear the news last week about Aaron Hernandez, and they look at his brain, and he has these advanced stages of CTE. So what do you think about that? And also, I think it's an interesting conversation about just kind of the future of football, because, of course, Aaron Hernandez's family is going to now sue the league. Maybe this is more of a lawyer question, but I'm just wondering what you think when you see a guy like that, who I think he's not even 30 years old, having these advanced stages of CTE already?
Well, first of all, I think that every NFL football player that they're going to examine, do pathology on, is going to have some element of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's what that CTE means. And it's basically brain disease from getting hit in the head. And a couple of things are clear. Number one, you don't need to have a concussion to have CTE. And if you have concussions, it probably makes your CTE worse. But virtually everybody they've studied that played any type of impact position, so absent kickers and maybe somebody placeholder, somebody who's not getting trauma, everybody else is going to have CTE if they play college, pro football, et cetera. So based on that, I think that's probably very true, probably advanced, and probably had something to do with some of his decisions. Now, I don't think that's the reason he killed everybody, but I'm sure it didn't help. And I think that the NFL has to deal with it. Now, the more pressing question is, there was just a study out that showed kids that are under 13 years old to play football and have no problems, go through school normally. You examine those kids when they're in their 20s and 30s, they also seem to have some brain trauma and some deficiencies based on when they played very young, even if they don't continue to play. So the answer is football is a traumatic sport. People do have brain problems or brain trauma, and everybody with CTE doesn't necessarily have issues. So some people are going to be confused. They're going to have trouble with speech. They're going to have trouble thinking. They get lost. They have trouble with bright lights. And then some people are going to get CTE, go out there throughout their whole life and never have any problems at all. So we haven't figured out who's going to have a problem and who isn't going to have a problem. And maybe the last problem, or the last question or problem is, how are we going to treat this? How are we going to stop people who want to play football from getting brain trauma And there probably is going to be an answer, I would say, in the next 4 or 5 years.
How do you think moving forward, you've seen the NFL, they've lessened practices, they've lessened padded practices where the guys aren't wearing full gear and helmets and you have less OTAs. So you're looking at that and you're saying, okay, you would think that big picture that's better for the players, just getting rid of some of those collisions that are happening in practice via or versus a game, but they're always going to have those collisions happening in the game. Do you really see any way to make this that much better unless you fundamentally change, for example, the helmet? Because it seems like as long as you have the helmets the way they are and you're going to have people launching with the head, knowing, you know, and using that as a weapon, that we're going to see this continue.
You know, I think you just hit the nail right on the head. And so what could you do? Well, you could take the helmets off. No one's going to ram their head into somebody's chest or other head without a helmet on. You could limit the weight of the athletes. It's gotten out of control. Linemen are 320, 325. Guys that used to weigh 190 or 245. And so you have mismatch of collisions. You can make it a non-contact sport, which no one's going to ever watch. But I agree with you that it's a very, very violent sport. It's gotten more violent. And everybody marvels at these hits. And they show them over and over and over again on SportsCenter. So as long as you put great credence into these crazy hits and these unbelievable sticks out in the field, then what you're going to do is, you're basically going to make those guys celebrities, and these hits are going to continue. Now, you're right. You can stop them in practice, and you can limit the number of hits basically when you're not having a game, but I don't even think that's the answer. I think it's those bone-crushing hits or when the offensive line will go head-to-head, play after play. Or like you said, somebody's going to lead with their head because that's the most effective way to tackle. Now, if everybody tackled correctly with their heads up and tackle with their arms, you might be able to decrease some of the trauma, but nobody wants to see that. You know, you watch football to see crazy hits and big plays, and no one wants to see that. So I don't see that happening. I think that's a money loser for the owners. And I guess my opinion would be you're going to have to fundamentally change the game or just accept that people are going to have, like boxing, you just accept people are going to have brain trauma if you're a boxer.
Well, you know, Doc, you bring up the big hits, and I know we focus a lot on the big hits. You also brought up that constant contact that the linemen have at the line of scrimmage, because that's every single play throughout the course of a game. Those guys are making contact with somebody. But isn't whiplash also an issue here, that a guy may not necessarily get hit in the head, but he could get hit in the body and whip his head back and rattle around inside of that helmet? Is that also a contributing factor?
Well, that's a great question, and that's a great, and you're 100% right. So we know from hockey, and we know from other sports, that just getting hit and having, like you said, it's called a contra coup lesion. Basically, your neck snaps back, your brain kind of, like you said, rattles inside the bone, and it causes brain trauma. So that gets back to little kids, and what happens to little kids is they don't have helmet-to-helmet hits. In fact, they don't have hardly any hits at all. But what they have is they do have whiplash, and then if they hit the ground, maybe their head snaps a little bit. But most of the hits are just what you're talking about, where the neck kind of gets snapped back, the brain moves a little bit. Now the brain's developing a little kid, so it's more vulnerable. And then they get this 25, 30-year-old brain trauma that we're starting to find out is a real problem. Based on that, you're 100% right. And then the other issue is girls' soccer, headers in girls' soccer. For some reason, this creates an immense amount of problems, and you can follow these kids, and they have decreases in their standardized testing after having X amount of headers, and it's been shown. The more headers in practice, the worse your test scores are. So you hit it on the head, and so even if you completely took away every head-to-head hit and you just made it as benign as you could, if you're going to hit somebody hard and you're going to snap their neck, they're going to have brain trauma. And, again, that's why we'll be asked. It's a great question, Charlie. What do you do to stop it? You've got to make it flag football.
Well, you know, I don't think we'll ever get to that flag football point because I think people, you know, they like that contact. But, you know, I watch rugby. And in rugby, they don't lead with the head, and they don't wear pads, and they are just as rugged as they are in the game of football. So maybe you adopt some type of rugby style to your tackling and maybe the rugby style to your gear. The other question I had when you look at the CTE and then the head traumas and things like this, Is there any way, and obviously we can't because you can't study the brain until the person is dead, but do you think that there'll be a time where you can determine how much contact is too much contact? In other words, if I had contact from high school through college into the pros, am I worse off than someone who only had it in high school and college or someone who only had it in high school, or is it really based upon the individual person?
Well, that's a great question, and your first point is probably the most important point is, what are we studying? What are we looking at? You know, if you break your arm, you get an X-ray, and it shows bones here, and there's a crack. But we have no way to study concussions. We don't have a test that tells us, A, you have a concussion, B, you're over your concussion, and C, what kind of cumulative trauma you've had over the years of playing football. So your question of, hey, is it worse if you play high school, college, and pro, or does it matter, or is it just a pro or just a college? Since we can't study, we don't know when someone's had a concussion, then we can't answer those questions. And more importantly, we can't tell you, all right, Charlie, go back and play already. Go back and play football. Your concussion's mm-hmm. over. And so it used to be, I've been doing this a long time, when we would treat guys with concussions, and the coach would ask, you know, the wide receiver or the corner or whoever, hey, you okay? Sure. And they go right back in the game. They would have no idea where they are. They couldn't tell you the president. They couldn't tell you the date. They couldn't tell you their name, but they're back out there the next play. Well, we know that's called double crush. That's the worst thing in the world for your brain. So once we get to a way that we can, and we will at some point have a way to measure the trauma in the brain because people are studying this because there's so much money involved. And once we can do that, then we can say, hey, you resolved your concussion. You know what we're going to find out? It probably takes a year to get over a concussion, and you probably shouldn't play after the first concussion for a year and maybe not at all after the second concussion, which is going to completely change the dynamics of football. But, you know, those are all really the right questions.
We're talking with Dr. Rick Lehman, the world-renowned orthopedic surgeon. Doc, the Blues yesterday announcing that forward Robbie Fabry will miss the remainder of training camp, re-injured his surgically repaired left knee, will be reevaluated in 10 days. You know, without maybe seeing exactly what's happened, should Blues fans be worried, you think, about something more long-term here?
Yes. I mean, I think he's probably – you don't know. No one knows. And I've talked to some insiders, and no one knows. But the number one concern would be that he re-tore his ACL because common things are common. And, yes, I would be concerned if someone's going to miss all the rest of training camp, just like if they're going to miss all of spring training or 2 days in football, because if you just had a little tweak, you take a day or two off the ice, and you'd be ready to go. So if they're being that cautious, then you have to be concerned that, you know, where there's a little smoke or fire, and I would be concerned.
Dr. Rick, question from our text line. It is, what is the best way to gain lean muscle, and what foods are best to eat to promote that? And is light beer better for belly fat than Bud Heavies, or should I just drink vodka club sodas? And I think he's being serious.
It's a great question. So to answer the hard part of the question first, you should drink vodka. You shouldn't drink beer. You can only drink so much vodka. It's the cleanest thing. If you really don't want to get a gut, then that you can drink, keeps your calories down, etc. I think if you're going to try to develop lean body mass, you have to eat things that have lots and lots of protein and good fat and no carbs. So lean meats, chicken, turkey, egg whites, your tofu, things that don't have – the thing that's going to kill you is the carbs, not the fat. So lean meats are great. Chicken is great. Turkey is great. Eggs are fine. But you just don't want to eat fatty meats, and you don't want to eat anything high in carbs. So what's going to kill you is pasta, bread, etc.
So you're saying my Saturday afternoon chili dogs are out?
I would put those on hold for you. Like, none of you guys are fat. You don't have to worry. I would put those on hold.
Okay. I'll just check it because that's like a staple in my house.
Well, I think you're fine there. You look like you're in pretty good shape.
Dr. Rick, we got another question from the text line. You kind of touched on it, but this person asking, what do you think about those anti-concussion headbands that you see, especially younger soccer players wearing?
Well, I think for hitters, they make a lot of sense. And there's all kinds of stuff that go into helmet sensors and data that go to the sidelines that give us information about how hard the hits are and what the impact of the hits are. The problem is they don't always correlate. So sometimes it looks like the hit's just been terrible and the athlete's fine. And sometimes it doesn't look like much anything. The guy comes off the field and they've obviously had a significant concussion. So we don't really have a good correlation yet between the kinetic energy and how bad clinically the athlete is. But I think those headbands, they're goofy, but I think those headbands are very important if you're going to do headers. And again, if they can catch on, then I think you have something, because I do think they decrease the stress that these athletes are incurring in their brain. So I'm a fan.
And one more from the text line, brown rice, is that okay for carbs?
Well, it depends. If you're going to have a chili dog, eat some brown rice, you're fine. but I don't think brown rice, if you want to build lean muscle mass, is a good thing to eat. You have to keep away from your carbs.
Dr. Rick, thank you for joining us. As always, we hear the phone ringing in the background. I'm sure you have real patience to get to. So thank you as always, sir.
Both you guys are awesome. Take care.
Thanks,
so
Doc.
So are you, sir. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Rick Lehman, the co-host, of course, of Sports Medicine with Andy Strickland. That was our segment, Rennie. Ask Dr. Rick.
Right.
He's the world-renowned orthopedic surgeon, founder and medical director of the U.S. Center for Sports Medicine in Kirkwood. And once again, co-host of Sports Medicine with Dr. Rick Lehman right here on 590 The Fan. Follow him on Twitter at Dr. Rick Lehman. I should have followed up better because I was getting to my text question, but what did he say at the end about you? You're in great shape?
I'm in great shape. Like, obviously, he hasn't really seen me lately. I mean, I know people go, hey, you must be in great shape. You lost all that weight. I went, yeah, I had basically open-heart surgery. I pretty much had to lose all the weight. But, you know, we talk about taking care of the kids coming up, playing a game of football and watching out for concussions and things like that and worried about CTE. But as a person in their 50s that played football in high school and in college and took a lot of hits, you know, tried to really give a lot of hits in practice as well as on the football field during the game, you start to wonder now, you know, if I'm forgetful about something or I can't quite see things a certain way, am I feeling the effects of something? You know, you do start to worry because as you do get older, there are certain signs of aging that come about naturally, but you wonder, did I speed up the process by playing football the way I played football? Am I a person that can end up with CTE somewhere down the line? And I hear a lot of the older football players say, well, I guess I'll just know over the course of time. And there's no way to tell. And it's kind of frightening because no one's talking about if you suspect that you have something, what you can do. Because really, there's nothing you could do. But hopefully, you know, live a nice, peaceful life.
I think what's really interesting, and Dr. Rick brought this up in talking about Aaron Hernandez, is you just wonder, how much does having CTE really influence your behavior? And and absolutely, I think most people would agree now when you read about this, when you kind of talk to former athletes, or if you see them on the news and giving interviews, and we've seen some of these former football players that have taken their own lives, yeah, and then they want their brain studied, a la a Junior Seau, and you just wonder moving forward, how much of people's behavior can you blame or could be used in a legal sense versus things they do in their lives,
yeah,
based on CTE? And I just wonder because Aaron Hernandez's family is suing the NFL. And this is a better question for a lawyer, but I wonder moving forward if when you sign your contract, will there be language saying,
yes,
look, you know,
yes,
you're signing up for a,
yes,
very violent game.
Yes.
It's going to damage your body. It's going to damage your brain. And thus you can't,
or
sue us
risk
for this.
You're at risk
because
of it
happening. You are knowingly doing this, and whatever happens after the fact, we are not liable because you know what you're signing up,
mm-hmm,
for, basically.
And, you know, a lot of the guys who have gone on and made a lot of money have said, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. I knew the risk going into it. But they haven't gotten to that point where they forget who they are. They forget who the people they're talking to are. When you get to that point, that's when you know, okay, did football do this to me, or was this going to happen to me anyway? And it's hard to answer that question because you don't know if everybody's susceptible to CTE. You don't know to what degree CTE is going to cause you to have these problems down the line because, as we've been saying, they have to open up your head and take your brain out in order to study it. And as the doctor said, what exactly are they studying? You know, you're discovering this person's got it, but can you determine how they got it and why they got it compared to someone else who didn't get it?
Another question for the doc. I didn't ask him because we had a similar question last week. I believe somebody said that their head fell off in 1976. How do they get it sewn back on? It's probably from the same person, but it's Stephen Wildwood, one of our favorites. And he says, hey, Doc, my friend who lives in Washington has his head up his ass. Can you give him some advice on removing it? And I think he means Washington, Illinois.
Or
Washington, Missouri, I should say. Yeah, there's a Washington, Illinois up by Peoria.
I think there's a Washington everywhere.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff, though. But I think the doctor's great because – you know, his mind is taking all this stuff in, and he kind of filters through it and gives us some pretty good answers and really gets your thoughts going. But I don't know if you'll ever see a time or a day when football isn't played the way football is played, because guys are bigger, stronger, and faster. I look at some of the games over the weekend, and, you know, they want to call that targeting and things like this. I say, well, it's kind of hard once I start going towards you to stop in midair or in mid-stride and change the direction I'm coming in. And a lot of times the guys who end up with those high hits, the person who receives the high hit has moved their body in a way where now the other person can't avoid you. And so I don't know how you take the hits like that out of the game of football.
Speaking of football, we're going to hear Barry Odom's fiery speech post-game after Mizzou gets beat by Auburn 51-14 on Saturday night. That's on the other side of the break here during the 2 o'clock hour. And we'll also get into more of the NFL anthem protest. We have a clip from Bob Costas to play. We didn't really get to talk with you, Rennie, since you came in around 1 or so.
Yeah.
No fault of your own, by the way.
I was working.
About the Cardinals. And by the way, I misspoke for the first time in my life.
What?
Actually. So just so we have it straight, schedule-wise, the Rockies are playing tonight. The Rockies are off on Thursday, okay? Rockies have Marlins and Dodgers to end the season. The Brewers are off tonight. The Brewers finish with the Reds. And, of course, then the Cardinals, the final three this week. Cardinals, 4 with the Cubs, 3 with the Brewers, Rennie. We're looking at, what, 6 games back in the division, 7 to play, 2.5 behind the Rockies for the second wild card. What's your percentage?
Cardinals, I can't do percentage.
Okay, but
I'm either in or out.
No. Could they maybe tie the Rockies and force
that single,
our crazy
that one game?
Tiebreaker for the second wild card?
Well, you know, you rewind back to 2011. And you know what happened down the stretch run, goes all the way down to the last game, and we had 2 celebrations down in Houston when they won the game and then when they actually ended up going to the postseason. I think anything is still possible at this point. I know that we watched this team, and we don't know who you're going to get, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You don't know who's going to pitch or who's going to hit. But I do think you still are in it. And do I think they could close this thing out? Yes. Crazier things have happened. Gosh. The Cubs won the World Series. Just put that into perspective.
But they were really good, too.
They were really good. But you look at this team, and at times they could be really good. And as bad as the Cardinals have been, and trust me, they were so bad at points, you're going, why don't you guys just kind of throw in the towel now? And that was like 2 months ago. But they still are in this. September baseball still matters. This week still matters. So you can't rule them out completely just yet.
And no, I'm not ruling them out.
And if you take 2 from the Cubs, that changes the landscape tremendously.
And we'll see what happens with the Rockies. But look, I am the eternal optimist. We were joking on Friday about Martin Kilcoyne and the glass half empty. I do try to look at everything glass half full. But when you look at over the course of this entire season, the Cardinals are 4-11 versus the Cubs. They're 7-9 versus the Brewers. And through all the ups and downs of this season, it's just a fact that the Cardinals have went on their little mini runs, whether it be the 6-game winning streak, the 8-game winning streak. I think they had another 6. They had a 10 out of 12 against the Padres and the Giants in there. When they have went on these runs, it has been the teams below 500 for the most part they're facing. They had the run
teams
where they take 4 from the Royals during that 8-game winning streak. But my point is, over the course of 155 games this season, they have not been able to beat the better teams in baseball. So based on that, it would surprise me if they turn that around this final week and all of a sudden go 5-2 versus the Cubs and Brewers, even though I absolutely want them to. I don't think there's been anything we've seen this season to lead you to believe that would happen.
I agree with you. I guess my only point is, in the world of sports, things happen. And looking at what this team has been able to put itself in, as far as you're in position to where you don't necessarily control your whole destiny, but, you know, you got a large way of making things happen to get you into the postseason. In other words, you win these games, you're there. I can't rule them out yet, Charlie. And trust me, I think we had Derek Gould on a couple of times. I was on the show, and one of the first things I said was, shouldn't they just, you know, sell the team and, you know, bring us a new player, start all over and start thinking about 2018? He's like, well, you know, if they get this bat, they might be able to get things back in order. They never did get that bat, but guys have performed and performed well enough to keep them, you know, within reach. And like I said, if you take care of the Cubs, and, you know, the Cubs aren't necessarily a team that you could just bank on and go, they've got it. You know, look at how they play.
In the division,
that well, this year.
But the division math at this point.
In the
point,
division. In
the division math is basically impossible. Well, like, it's not going to happen.
Oh, no, I'm not saying you win the division, but I'm saying if you could do well against the Cubs, you know, you win a couple here, man, that's vastly going to improve your chances. I mean, obviously they've got to win, what, five?
Well, it depends on the Rockies. You would think, okay.
But you take five. You got to go, like, 5-2. You think you have their best chance.
So you're 2.5 back of the Rockies. Rockies have 6 games left. Mm-hmm. Cardinals have 7. So if the Cardinals go 5-2, what's the math there? The Rockies then have to go, would it be 3-3? That gets you a tie, correct? Chris Gardner, I'm not good at math.
Asking a lot of math questions.
He's not paying attention.
Come down
but
here for math.
It's something along those lines where if the Cardinals win 5, the Rockies basically have to go 500.
Mm.
And so if the Cardinals don't win 5, the chances of them getting there are almost zero. Remember, you still have the Brewers. The Brewers still technically could squeak in there as well. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Brewers are actually better than the Cardinals, rather. They're a half game.
So you got a week where you're playing one team that's looking to get some momentum headed towards the postseason, being the Chicago Cubs. You got another team you're going to face at the end of the week that's in the dogfight just like you are to get into the postseason as well. So, yeah, I guess that does kind of hurt your chances as far as just the emotions and all that. But, again, you're at home. That's got to help. And you got a lot of young players that have an opportunity now to make a statement and, you know, really build on who they are moving forward in this organization. You show up big this week, people are saying your name.
I hope that's the case, Rennie. I hope that's the case. I'm not banking on it, but I hope that's what takes place right across the street here at Busch Stadium as we sit here at patios. Coming up, other side of the break, we'll hear those comments from Barry Odom. We'll talk more about the NFL anthem protest. Charlie Marlowe, Rennie Knott, Chris Gardner, Matt Dahlberg, Brendan Schaefer back at the Kirkwood studio. Martin Kilcoyne off today on the Midday Grind on 590 The Fan. 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com live from patios downtown. And picking up slack. I want a girl with a short skirt.